south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You've heard me say this before. Just when I thought I've seen everything, well, something comes up and I say, wow, that's completely new and novel, maybe even a shocker. And you'd think, after being down here more than 30 years, I've seen just about everything. And if I haven't seen it, I've heard about it. Well, I've been proven wrong on that count many times. Like, for example, this weekend, I went to a Mother's Day get-together. Yeah, they have Mother's Day and Father's Day and all those holidays down here, too. Sometimes they're not exactly at the same time as you guys have it up north. In most countries in Latin America, believe it or not, Mother's Day comes a week later than it does up in the States. Well, anyway, you don't want to forget your mom, right? The only thing worse than that, and what you'll suffer for a lot more, is if you forget your wife or girlfriend's birthday or anniversary. Oh, and down here in Latin America, if you have a Latina or a Latino significant other, they're really big on that first date, too. I mean, remembering that first date and what happened. Not only where it took place and where it happened, I'm talking about the official first date. You better remember the date, because she will. You don't have to buy anything, no gifts or anything. You just have to mention it, that you remember, this is the anniversary of our first date. Then you're covered. No doghouse tonight. It's happened to me. Believe me, I've seen that look before. It's like, aren't you forgetting something about today? Come on, spit it out. I'm waiting. And you better remember. Yes, it's true. Gringos and expats often end up in the doghouse for things they never would have gotten in trouble for up in the States. It's a different culture in time you learn. Not that you have to take her out or give her a present or anything. You just have to remember it. You have to be able to mention it. That's why expat Eddie always says, and he's had lots of Latina girlfriends, you know. He told me more than once, if you got a new Latino girlfriend, make sure on that first date, that official first date, you know, a restaurant date, whatever, you know, the kind of first formal date when you go to a decent restaurant, maybe buy her roses or chocolates, flowers, whatever. Eddie says, save yourself a lot of grief and do it on a day everyone remembers. Memorial Day, 4th of July. Labor Day, Valentine's Day, your birthday, her birthday, Groundhog Day, Dumpster Day, whatever. That way, you'll never forget. So, anyway, I got invited to a Mother's Day event out in the campo, you know, out in the boonies. Was a pretty big shindig, too. And Mother's Day being a Sunday here in Latin America, too. Man, Latinos don't need much of a reason to have a party, but Mother's Day, they go all out. It's like Memorial Day or the 4th of July in the States. It seemed there's yard and barbecue parties every third or fourth house. And of course, it comes with that rotten reggaeton music that's blasting throughout every neighborhood too, even out in the boonies. But luckily enough, there are just as many Latin American lady grandmothers and great-grandmothers too, abuelas and vice-abuelas, who, thankfully like me, and most gringos and expats can't stomach reggaeton. So when you drive past a house where people are mulling around having a great time, barbecue going and all that, the music's blasting salsa or merengue or bachata. If it's anything but damn reggaeton, then you know. The object of that Mother's Day party is not mother, it's grandma or great-grandma. Because, you know, la abuela y vice-abuela, they can't dance to reggaeton. Never could, never will. But they can salsa and merengue till the cows come home. Or driveway chickens, whoever comes home first. So anyway, I'm at this Mother's Day party on the boonies. Music blasting, and as usual, I'm the only gringo there. And once again, I'm kind of like a B-grade rock star, getting lots of attention from people. Of course, there'll always be a few guys who'll walk up and try to use their broken English on me, and I know nearly 100% of the time, those guys that step right up and start talking in English, no matter how bad it is, they've been deported. Oh, and you can predict the famous first words coming out of their mouth will be, "Hey man, where'd you from?" And I'll say, "Where'd you learn your English?" Though, in my head, the question I'm really asking is a bit less polite. I'm thinking, where'd you learn that shitty ghetto English? Then they'll rattle off the city and state they were living in before they were so rudely picked up and deported. Isn't it funny? Every single person I've ever met in Latin America who's been deported, who's laid that line on me, where'd you from, man? I just know, the rest of the night and the rest of the party, the guy's going to want to be my friend. He's going to cling to me. And you know what? I hate that. But I don't show it. I'm not rude. You know, you're a guest at someone else's place, someone else's party. Yeah, put on a happy face and try to think of ways to dodge the guy without him, you know, taking offense. That's one of the few downsides of being off the gringo tourist trail. When you're on the trail, there's so many gringos and expats around and locals who speak English, like in Costa Rica, for example. I've found, anyway, there's not a real good chance that you're ever going to get invited to someone's house party or Mother's Day party. Not a party given by a local, anyway. Because, again, if you're living on the gringo tourist trail, all your neighbors and friends and probably the neighborhood and colony you're living in will be mostly composed of gringos. Remember, down here in Latin America, your neighborhood's called a colonia, like a colony of bees. Anyway, when you're on the gringo tourist trail, your composition of local friends are going to be gringos. That's the point, right? Not my style, though. I tried it for a long time in the early years, but didn't like it. Couldn't learn my Spanish, couldn't basically absorb the culture, couldn't get truly accepted by the locals. That's basically why so many gringos like to live on the gringo tourist trail, so they can hang with gringos and live in gringo neighborhoods, speak English, and hang with gringos all the time. They like living in a gringo expat bubble. They want a soft landing. But back to the story. You know, being the only gringo at a party of maybe 35 or even 50 people that day, well, you kind of get passed around. You got to meet everyone. Everyone wants to say hello. You won't remember any of their names, especially me. I'm not one of those kinds that remember names. In fact, I'm so terrible at names. It's always been a big problem for me, a major defect, you could say. Sometimes I think I'm missing a vital part of my brain because I could get introduced to someone and in 2 minutes completely forget their name. I've been told I just haven't been paying attention in the moment. I'm concentrating on something else. I kind of glaze over the name and I'm waiting for what they have to say next. Who knows? A million people have tried to analyze it because many people have the same problem. I know. There's kind of a learned skill to it. You can go on YouTube. There are videos about how to remember names. How about that? As for me, I'm not interested, actually. I've gotten this far in life without too much embarrassment, so what the hell? But, you know, there's a huge downside to not remembering names. If, let's say, the second, third, or fourth time you run into that mystery person, if you're alone, that's okay, because when it's just two people talking, no one mentions names. The problem is, if you happen to be with somebody, the polite thing to do is to introduce your friend to that mystery guy. But how are you going to do that when you don't remember his name? It's a dilemma for sure. Thank God I'm excellent with faces. But I think you get it. Has that happened to you? You run into someone you kind of know, and you're with someone. You have to introduce the guy that's with you. Now, come on, you don't say something like, "This is my buddy Tim. And Tim, this guy here, I don't remember his name. Sorry, I met him before, but just don't remember." A bit awkward, huh? People like me who don't remember names just don't do that. There's got to be another way, right? Anyway, admitting right off the bat you don't remember someone's name is not a very good social icebreaker. I can't tell you how many hundreds of times I've been in that spot. So what I usually do is this as a fallback position. If, for example, I'm with somebody and I run into someone who I should know their name but don't, I'll say hi to that guy or girl, make the usual small talk, but I'll completely avoid the fact there's a friend with me. In other words, I won't introduce him. I won't say, "And this is my buddy so-and-so." Because then I'm obliged to say to my buddy, "And this is my friend, a mystery guy," because I don't remember his name. So I just kind of gloss over the introduction completely and don't do it. Of course, I'm not a permanent blockhead. If I meet a guy two or three or four times, I finally get the name instilled in my head. So anyway, if I'm with a friend and I meet a mystery guy, I don't do any introductions. I let the chips fall as they may, and sometimes it works out, sometimes not so good. Of course, my mother would say that's kind of rude because you're supposed to do introductions right away. If you don't, like my fallback plan, either the guy I'm with or the other guy whose name I can't remember will eventually break the ice and say, "Hi, my name's Tim. What's yours?" Sure, at first it could get a little rocky and there could be some pregnant pauses, but eventually the two strangers will introduce themselves, which is infinitely less tacky than me coming out and saying, "This is my buddy Tim, and I can't remember this guy's name." So the fact is, I have a really hard time with names. And in a way, that's pretty weird since everyone remembers my name. But it's an easy one. Johnny. Now, it's not as if my memory is shot. In other respects, I have a terrific memory. So go figure. Now, the point of this rant is the fact that I met a guy at that Mother's Day party whom I'll never forget. You heard me say this before, but Latinos have the craziest names. Of course, in the States, if you're a gangbanger, rapper, or hip-hopper, or you just were brought up in the hood, as far as names, well, pretty much anything goes, right? In the States, weird names prevail. I don't know why parents do that to their kids, but they do. Oddly enough, though, Latinos up in the States are not nearly as name crazy as the black culture. Black culture has created a kind of a linguistic minefield that white people just don't seem to be able to navigate through. While down here in Latin America, and even in the Latin cultures up in the States, they've got their own name game style. Of course, they're the usual names. The Julios, the Juans, the Marias. They still use lots of traditional names. I'd say 3/4 of Latinos and Latinas have traditional Latin names. I've been told it's because of the Christian biblical thing. It turns out lots and lots of religious Latinos and Latinas will not give their kid a name unless it appears somewhere in the Bible. You know, I'm not religious, but it ain't such a bad idea. Of course, we're talking first names now. Or even first, second, and third names, because, you know, Latinos generally have 4 names or even more, whereas Americans have 2 or 3. Speaking of some of the strange ways Latinos name their kids, you know, there are lots of Juan Marias down here. Jose Marias, too. I'm talking about men whose name is Juan, which is John, right? Middle name, Maria. A lady's name, a female. And when I first met a guy with a female middle name, I was kind of confused. But it is a tradition down here. I've met quite a few. I've met Latino guys named Jose Maria, too. Means Joe Maria. And Latina ladies named Maria Jose. There are tons of them. I meet them all the time. Maria Jose. In English, that's Mary Jo. Now, one of the things that Latin culture is really big on, much more than American culture, is nicknames. I'd say about 20%, about every 5th person you meet down here, Latinos, I mean, has a nickname. Of course, in the States, people have nicknames too, like Junior or Red or Whitey or Slick. But we're talking maybe only 1 out of 20 or 30 Americans. However, Latinos just love their nicknames. And one of their favorite nicknames is Gordo, means fatty. And for female fatties like Lizzo, Gorda. And it's no cut down, it's a term of endearment. Meanwhile, you know what would happen up in the States if you called someone fatty. I mean, really, you don't get a name like that because you're rail thin. Up in the States, that would be one of those names that hurts people's feelings so much. You'd be viciously attacked by whiners on anti-social media. Even if it started out as a childhood nickname. If you use it online or in social media, they'd cancel you for it. You'd be a horrible person, a fat shamer. But here in Latin America, every family has a Gordo. Or Gorda. A guy or a gal named Fatty. And down here, it's just a name. It's not a put down at all. Nobody's making a judgment. In fact, I've heard many times women use the nickname Fatty, Gordo, when speaking to their boyfriends or husbands as a term of endearment. And they're not referring to a particular body part. It's just a term of endearment. People use it in romantic conversations. They'll often slip it in when they're whispering sweet nothings to their partner. I know, strange but true. Imagine if your girlfriend, wife, or mistress, whatever, put on the lingerie, had a couple glasses of wine, started cuddling up and trying to get you in the mood by calling you fatty. Would that work? Well, I imagine it would probably have the opposite effect. Now, guys, imagine calling your girlfriend or better half fatty. Then see how well the night goes. But where were we? Oh, yeah. Back at the party doing introductions, and I ran into a guy whose name I'll never forget. Well, he was kind of a happy-go-lucky 25-ish short guy. Introduced to me as Chemo, as in chemotherapy. I kid you not, Chemo was in the house. Yep, that's right, Chemo. When I said, how do you spell that? He said, C-H-E-M-O. Just like the front-end root word of chemotherapy. There's a guy whose name I won't forget till the day I die. In fact, if I don't see him for 50 years and I run into him, let's say at the airport, I'll say, hey, it's my old buddy Chemo. Long time no see. Then, of course, later on, I was sitting talking to his sister and I said, how'd he get a name like that? She said, I don't know. That's his name. And then I told her what I just told you guys, that I hardly ever remember names, but I'll sure remember his. She said, why? And I said, have you heard the word chemotherapy? In Spanish, it's quimioterapia. Then her eyes widened and she started to laugh. And then I spelled it for her. She said, I'll have to tell my brother to start spelling chemo with a K, just so the gringos don't laugh. And I said, no, don't do that. If he runs into some gringos again, it's a great icebreaker. I mean, look, I must have met 50 people today, and he's the one I'm talking about, right? Certainly makes an impression. Is it a good first impression? I don't know, but it's certainly an impression. Then, later at the party, I was sitting in a room with about 5 girls and 3 guys. And 3 of the girls, actually, they were ladies in their 30s. They were sisters, one of them a nurse, and one of them a freshly minted MD, a doc, in her last year of school, actually doing her residency. Now, you might not believe what I'm going to tell you next, but talk about first impressions. I was sitting right next to this freshly minted doc. She was trying to talk to me a bit in English. You know, docs down here in Latin America are forced to take English classes. It's part of the curriculum now. That's good. So a lot of them are absolutely fluent and some not so much, like this lady. She was decent enough at it, but you could tell it was hard going. You need someone to practice with, and she's living out in the boonies there where nobody speaks English. So she's just learning it at school in the city. Then, after sitting there a couple of minutes, listening to the crowd and occasionally talking to this MD lady, well, I'm a curious, observant guy, and my eyes do wander. And man, I'll tell you, it was the strangest thing. I looked down at the doc's hands, and they were folded across her lap. It was one of those rare occasions in my life when I was speechless. Now, this is no joke, but she had 6 fingers on each hand. Yep, that's right. Right where her little finger was, there was another slightly smaller finger growing out right from the root of it, on both hands. They were more or less perfectly formed, with 2 normal joints for movement, fingernails and all. And you know, being a lady at the Mother's Day party, she was all dolled up with fingernail polish on every finger, including number 6. And I thought, you know, everyone in this room, everyone at this party, everyone in the neighborhood knows this lady, knows she has 6 fingers. And I thought, man, what if you met someone in the States like that? Or had someone like that in your family? Or you had a teacher, physician, or dentist like that. I don't know if she had 6 toes or not, but if you had 6 toes, at least you'd be wearing shoes. No one would know or care. So then once we left, I mentioned to the lady I came with, I saw the 6 fingers. She said, oh, you did, huh? Very observant. I found out she has an uncle who has the same thing, polydactyly it's called. And naturally I said, if she's a doc, she's got to wear gloves all the time. How do you think that works out? And my friend said, and this is all going down in Spanish, of course, good question, never thought of it. Then I said, being a little different like that, has she ever had any problems growing up? Kids maybe picking on her, bullying, that kind of thing? You know how kids can be. She said, no. What for? And I thought, man, they have a completely different attitude about things here in Latin America, because I thought if there had been a kid like that in my school or neighborhood, life for that kid would have been tough. So being curious about it, when I got home, I checked the internet. 1 out of about 1,500 people is born with an extra finger or toe. And believe it or not, 10 times as many Africans and African Americans have that syndrome. And it turns out in almost all cases, the doctor will snip those fingers off or surgically remove them before the kid is 2. Then there'll be no scar at all there. Won't even be able to notice. But those statistics are from the first world, down in Latin America, where people are much less judgmental. They're less concerned and more apt to let that stuff slide. In fact, I've noticed other physical anomalies that could be easily corrected. I mean, really cheap, cosmetic stuff. Yet, a lot of people don't have that work done. Like, for example, once in a while, you'll see someone who's got a really bulbous mole or polyp on their nose or neck. And you just know that if that person was living in the States, it'd have been gone a long time ago. It's kind of funny, too, because down here in Latin America, where plastic surgery is king, man, practically every girl, if she had the money, would have something done. Any girl, I'd say, under 50. But still, something cheap and easy to fix, like a hideous mole or bulbous polyp. For some down here, especially the over 50 crowd, it's not a priority. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying people are running around with big, ugly, hairy moles, polyps, and cysts. It's just that you see a lot more of that in the general population because people don't tend to get that stuff worked on. Sometimes, you know, when I see an old lady with a hairy mole on her face, I just want to yank it out. Though, maybe it's just a lag time thing, too, because I remember my dad had a cyst in his arm for years and years, and it was kind of obvious when he flexed his muscles. Didn't bother him, he said, but it bothered my mother enough so that she nagged him into having it cut out. And after that, when he made certain movements and flexed his muscles, it appeared absolutely fine and normal. Did the trick, 100%. It wasn't a priority for him to have anything done about it at all. After all, it didn't hurt, but my mom had other plans. So in regards to physical anomalies, please send me your own stories about family members who have 6 toes and 6 fingers. Come on, fess up. If there's 1 in 1,500 kids born that way, even more if you're black, there's got to be some stories out there. Which reminds me, not so long ago, I read about a tomb that was unearthed in Peru, where they found some kind of king and some priests and some holy men, you know, shamans. And apparently all the holy guys or shamans were lumped together in a particular grave with all their clothes and vestments and jewels and all that. And every one of those guys had six fingers. So obviously, how you were treated if you were born with six fingers or toes depended on what era and culture you were born in. Depending on your luck, you could have been considered a shaman, a devil, a demon, or an angel. Certainly, it turns out in the age of the Spanish Inquisition, you'd be considered a witch and they'd burn you at the stake. Enough said about that. Oh, by the way, remember a couple of shows ago I was talking about my own personal problem, RLS, Restless Leg Syndrome. You remember I said I had it all my life and I didn't even know it was a sickness until the shrinks invented a name for it and Big Pharma invented a so-called cure for it. Actually, Big Pharma doesn't like cures because there's no money in them. Why cure a guy when you could keep him on daily pills forever? For everyone who's on a continuous prescription of anything, that's like an annuity for the drug companies. Anyway, after I revealed my own restless leg syndrome saga, I got a bunch of listener emails saying, funny you brought that up. Like this email from Hugo. He says, I have had a similar problem, but it wasn't the leg. It was my fingertips. I'd always be tap, tap, tapping away on things, even as a kid, and adults in the room would try to get me to stop, even got my fingers whacked by the teachers in public school. I remember my woodshop teacher giving me a smack on the wrist when I was playing Wipeout on the desk. Well, Johnny, by dumb luck, I happened to get in a marching band in junior high, played the snare drum, one of the best things that ever happened to me. From there, I graduated to high school jazz band and on to rocking and rolling and playing in clubs and turned that little annoying tapping pattern into a kind of a career. So maybe, Johnny, you missed your calling and you should have played the drums instead of guitar. Maybe you could have been a spectacular drummer. Signed, Hugo from Detroit. All right, thanks for that, Hugo. Is that your real name, Hugo? You're from the Midwest, from Detroit. I'm from Chicago. And back then, when we grew up, it sounds like you're pretty much the same age as me. You'd have got your ass kicked all the time with a name like Hugo. And heaven forbid your parents named you Dick. Anyway, Hugo, I thought pretty much the same thing. When I was young, I wanted to play the drums because, you know, restless leg syndrome. That definitely meant my leg muscles were all tuned up. Great for bass drum, hi-hat work, keeping the beat. But the problem was there was a kid down the block had a drum set. When he practiced, he'd drive the neighbors crazy. I knew my parents wouldn't go for it just because of the racket. So, Hugo, maybe in the next life, huh? Then Sally writes, Johnny, you know, there are many forms of restless muscle syndrome. She says, I have a tick in my eye. Restless eye syndrome, you could call it. She says, I don't notice it because I've been doing it all my life, but people tell me I blink my right eye 3 or 4 times as much as my left. So I guess I don't know what's more annoying, restless leg or restless eye. Signed, Sally from Muskego, Wisconsin. Hey, I know where that is. And funny you should mention that, Sally. There is a YouTube channel I watch once in a while. It's called The Nomad Capitalist. I'm not saying this to offend you or anything, but I can't really watch the guy too much because he's got that restless eye thing going too. One of his eyes blinks 3 or 4 times more than the other. And every time he does it, he squinches his face a little bit. It's really strange and somewhat annoying. Oh, and I mustn't forget this email on that same subject from one of our favorite guys in Mexico, Expat RG. He says, Dear Johnny, man, did you hit a sympathy chord with that RLS story, that restless leg syndrome thing. I realize now that in my youth, I was severely affected with a variant of that. RPS, that's restless penis syndrome. I can't tell you how embarrassing that was. So how did it manifest? It would suddenly seek to venture out and travel. Yeah, I had it badly now that I think about it in hindsight. And back then, there wasn't a term for it or a pill for it either. However, I thank the great gods I survived to live today without pharmaceutical intervention. Back then, though, I don't know how I did it, but I suffered through. But now I assume there'd be some multiple highly effective chemical interventions thanks to miracle developments from selfless guys like Dr. Fauci and all those noble, big-hearted heroes at Big Pharma. Now, as a boomer, I know that many things grow more beautiful with time. Like wine, trees, and stately buildings. Unfortunately, we don't. Luckily for me, though, aging has its positive secondary effects. You see, Johnny, time seems to have arrested my terrible affliction. I find I'm mostly cured in my elder years, although my wife bemoans the fact that occasionally, just occasionally, I seem to suffer a relapse. But according to her, it's now blessedly minor and often a false alarm. However, in the future, if it does flare up and I start getting complaints from the wife, my plan B is to don my mask, go down to the COVID booster clinic, and get topped off. Then he says, anyway, Johnny, thanks for having the courage to share the embarrassing details of your own awful leg condition. Obviously, your listener's sympathy is well-deserved. And thanks for all you share and do for us expats and aspiring border hoppers. Signed, longtime listener in Mexico, Mr. RG. Oh, and now a very short email from Leslie. Don't know if it's a guy or a girl. Oh, it's a girl. And she says, Johnny, what's your take on the Ukraine-Russian war thing? Do you think there's an end in sight, or is it just going to keep rolling on? And how are Latin Americans viewing that war? We certainly know that most Americans in mainstream media are on the Ukrainian side. They've painted Zelensky as an angel and Putin as the devil. So what are Latin Americans thinking? Signed, Leslie from Maine. Well, Leslie, funny you should ask that, because no one here in Latin America, I mean, no one ever talks about that. I mean, Latinos and Latinos, that is. Sure, you got the odd gringo and expat talking about Putin or Zelensky or the media or how it's been twisted, whatever. But Latinos don't seem to pay it any mind at all. They've got no opinion. It's not a blip on anyone's radar. You know me, I get into discussions with Latinos of different classes all the time, and it never seems to come up. Sure, Latinos see the same internet news feeds translated into Spanish, but they don't even read them. And when you really put an adult Latino or Latina on the spot, try to get an answer out of them about the war, they either have no opinion or fall in line with the general first world trend of thinking Putin's the devil. But really, they seem to be totally undereducated about it, and they don't want to know. It's just light years away from any aspect of Latin life. Now, as far as Russians in Latin America, there's two types. Russian tourists in the Dominican Republic, because it's one of the only Western countries where a Russian doesn't need a visa to enter. And Russian girls in strip clubs. They're in every Latin country. Those Russian strippers are in great demand by Latino guys because those girls are very white and their hair is naturally blonde. However, since the war, even in the DR, Russian tourism has completely dried up. They're banned from coming in now. And as far as tourism, hotel people are telling me, there's a real shortage of blonde Barbie clones and Dolph Lundgren lookalikes in Punta Cana, Dominican Republic. But the restaurant menus are still in English, Spanish, and Russian. But you know, speaking of war, according to expat Eddie, war is not all terrible. It does tend to teach stupid Americans geography.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.